Wisdom Traditions is pleased to present this audio production of the classic work by Wallace D. Wattles, The Science of Getting Rich. The book was originally published in 1910 and has been moderately revised for the benefit of the modern listener. It is important to bear in mind that no book by itself will change you. There are many self-help and success books that are bought and read, but whose principles are never applied by the reader. One reason we put this book on tape is that it lends itself beautifully to multiple listenings. We recommend that you listen several times, but please don't make it a burden. Carry it in your car, put it in your Walkman, and listen to it from time to time. In the beginning, listen to it often. As time goes on, revisit it occasionally, a chapter here and a chapter there. It's like dipping into a well, or like exercise. You can't do it in January and expect it to last all year. It's a practice. The principles in this book will change your life if you learn them, but it's not work, it's a liberation. So relax, listen, and enjoy. We won't tell you any more about the book right now, but encourage you to listen to it all the way through before you judge it. The beginning is the hardest part. The heart and soul is the last two-thirds of the book. We are certain that each and every one of you that care to will benefit enormously from this work. This is a copyrighted presentation, and reproduction for profit is prohibited. However, we encourage you to copy and share this program with anyone you think will benefit. The Science of Getting Rich by Wallace Wattles. Author's Preface. This program is practical, not philosophical. A simple manual, not a treatise upon theories. It is intended for those whose most pressing need is for more money, those who wish to act first and philosophize later, those who have neither the time, the means, nor the opportunity to go deeply into the study of metaphysics, but who want results and are willing to take the conclusions of science as a basis for action, without going into all the processes by which those conclusions were reached. It is designed for the person who will take the fundamental statements upon faith, just as most people would take advice concerning stock market investing if it were offered by Peter Lynch, George Soros, or Warren Buffett, and then prove their truth by acting upon them without fear or hesitation. Anyone who does this will certainly get rich, for the method described here is exact, and failure is impossible. However, for the benefit of those who wish to investigate further on their own, and so secure a logical basis for faith, I will here cite certain authorities. The theory of the universe, that all is one, that one substance manifests itself as the seeming many elements of the material world, is of Hindu origin and has been gradually winning its way into the thought of the Western world for nearly 300 years. It is the foundation of all the Oriental philosophies, as well as those of Descartes, Spinoza, Leibniz, Schopenhauer, Hegel, and Emerson. Anyone who wishes to dig to the philosophical foundations of this work is advised to read the authors mentioned above, especially Hegel and Emerson. In preparing this program, I have strived to keep it simple so that anyone could understand. The plan of action outlined was deduced from the conclusions of philosophy. It has been thoroughly tested and bears the supreme test of practical experiment, and it works. If you care to learn how the conclusions were arrived at, I would encourage you to read the authors mentioned above. If, however, you simply wish to reap the benefit of their philosophies in actual practice, then listen carefully to this program, study it, and do exactly as it tells you to do. Chapter 1. The Right to be Rich. Whatever may be said in praise of poverty, the fact remains that it's not possible to live a complete or really successful life unless one has plenty of money. You cannot rise to your highest level in talent or achievement without it, for to do so you must have many things to use, and you cannot have these things unless you have money to buy them with. A person develops in mind, soul, and body by making use of things, and society has become so organized that you must have money in order to become the possessor of things. You can see, therefore, that the basis of advancements is what we shall call the science of getting rich. The object of all life is development, and everything that lives has an inalienable right to all the development it is capable of attaining. Your right to life means your right to have the free and unrestricted use of all the things which may be necessary to your fullest mental, spiritual, and physical development, or in other words, your right to be rich. In this program, I will not speak of riches in a figurative way. To be really rich does not mean to be satisfied or contented with a little. No one ought to be satisfied with a little if he or she is capable of using and enjoying more. The purpose of nature is the advancement and development of life, and everyone should have all that can contribute to the power, elegance, beauty, and richness of life. To be content with less is senseless. The person who is able to experience all the life they are capable of is rich, and no one without plenty of money has all she wants. Life has advanced so far and become so complex that even the most ordinary person requires a great amount of money to live in a manner that even approaches completeness. Everyone naturally wants to become all they are capable of being. This desire to realize innate possibilities is inherent in human nature. We cannot help wanting to be all that we can be. Success is becoming what you want to be. You can become what you want to be only by making the use of things, and you can have the free use of things only as you become rich enough to own them. To understand the science of getting rich, therefore, is among the most essential of all knowledge. There is nothing wrong with wanting to get rich. The desire for riches is really the desire for a richer, fuller, and more abundant life, and that desire is praiseworthy. The man or woman who does not desire to live more abundantly is abnormal, and so the man or woman who does not desire to have enough money to buy what they want is abnormal. There are three motives for which we live. We live for the body, the mind, and the soul. No one of these is better or holier than the other. All are alike desirable, and no one of the three, body, mind, or soul, can live fully if either of the other two is cut short of full life and expression. It is not right or noble to live only for the soul and deny either mind or body. At the same time, it is a mistake to live for the intellect and deny your body and your soul. I'm sure we're all acquainted with the sorry consequences of living for the body and denying both mind and soul. And we see that real life means the complete expression of all that we can give forth through body, mind, and soul. No one can be really happy or satisfied unless his body is living fully in every function, and unless the same is true of his mind and his soul. Wherever there is unexpressed possibility or function not performed, there is unsatisfied desire. Desire is possibility seeking expression, or function seeking performance. You cannot live fully in body without good food, comfortable clothing, and warm shelter, and without freedom from excessive toil. Rest and recreation are also necessary to your physical life. You cannot live fully in mind without books and time to study them, without opportunity for travel and observation, or without intellectual companionship. You must have intellectual recreations and surround yourself with all the objects of art and beauty you are capable of using and appreciating. To live fully in soul, you must have love, and love is denied expression by poverty. A person's highest happiness is often found in the bestowal of gifts on the people they love. Love finds its most natural and spontaneous expression in giving. If you have nothing to give, you cannot fill your place as a spouse or parent, as a citizen or as a neighbor. It is in the use of material things that a person finds full life for their body, develops their mind, and unfolds their soul. It is therefore of supreme importance that one should be rich. It is perfectly right that you should desire to be rich. If you are a normal man or woman, you cannot help doing so. It is perfectly right that you should give your best attention to the science of getting rich, for it is among the noblest and most necessary of all studies. If you neglect this study, you are derelict in your duty to yourself, to God and humanity, for you can render no greater service to the world than to make the most of yourself. Chapter 2. There is a science of getting rich. There is a science of getting rich, and it is an exact science, like algebra or arithmetic. There are certain laws which govern the process of acquiring riches. Once these laws are learned and obeyed by anyone, that person will get rich with mathematical certainty. The ownership of money and property comes as a result of doing things in a certain way. Those who learn to do things in this certain way, whether on purpose or accidentally, get rich, while those who do not do things in this certain way, no matter how hard they work or how able they are, remain poor. It is a natural law that like causes always produce like effects. and therefore any man or woman who learns to do things in a certain way will infallibly get rich. That the above statement is true is shown by the following evidence. Getting rich is not simply a matter of environment, for if it were, all the people in certain neighborhoods would become wealthy. The people in one city might all be rich, while those of other towns would all be poor. The inhabitants of one state would all roll in wealth, while those in an adjoining state would be in poverty. But everywhere we see rich and poor living side by side in the same environment, and often engaged in the same vocations. When two men are in the same locality and in the same business, and one gets rich while the other remains poor, it shows that getting rich is not primarily a matter of environment. Some environments may be more favorable than others, but when two people in the same business are in the same neighborhood, and one gets rich while the other fails, it indicates that getting rich is the result of doing things in a certain way. And further, the ability to do things in a certain way is not due solely to the possession of talent, for many people who have great talent remain poor, while others who have very little talent get rich. Studying the people who have gotten rich, we usually find that they are an average lot in all respects, having no greater talents or abilities than others. It's evident that they do not get rich because they possess talents and abilities that others have not, but because they happen to do things in a certain way. In fact, it is the doing of things in this certain way that often leads to the development of talents and abilities that aid in success. Getting rich is not the result of saving or thrift. Many very frugal people are poor, while free spenders often get rich. Nor is getting rich the result of doing things which others fail to do. For two persons in the same business often do almost exactly the same things, and one gets rich while the other remains poor or goes bankrupt. From all these things, we come to the conclusion that getting rich is the result of doing things in a certain way. If getting rich is the result of doing things in a certain way, and if like causes always produce like effects, then anyone who can do things in that way can become rich, and the whole matter is brought into the domain of exact science. The question arises here, whether this certain way may not be so difficult that only a few may follow it. But this cannot be true, as we have seen, so far as natural ability is concerned. Talented people get rich, and clueless people get rich. Intelligent people get rich, and stupid people get rich. Healthy people get rich, and weak and sickly people get rich. Some ability to think and understand is, of course, essential, but as far as ability is concerned, anyone who has sense enough to hear and understand these words can certainly get rich. Also, we have seen that it is not a matter of environment. Location counts for something. You wouldn't go to the heart of the Sahara Desert and expect to do successful business. Getting rich involves the necessity of dealing with people and of being where there are people to deal with. And if these people are inclined to deal in the way that you want to deal, so much the better. But that is about as far as environment goes. If anyone else in your town can get rich, so can you. And if anyone else in your state can get rich, so can you. Again, it's not a matter of choosing some particular business or profession. People get rich in every business and in every profession. You'll do best in a business which you like and which is pleasant to you. And if you have certain talents which are well developed, you will do best in a business which calls for the use of those talents. Also, you'll do best in a business which is suited to your location. A takeout food business would do better in an urban setting than in the middle of the country, and a salmon fishery will do better in the Northwest than in Florida, where there are no salmon. But aside from these general limitations, getting rich is not dependent on your engaging in some particular business, but upon your learning to do things in a certain way. If you are now in business and anyone else in your area is getting rich in that same business while you are not getting rich, it is because you are not doing things in the same way that the other person is doing them. No one is prevented from getting rich by a lack of capital. True, as you get capital, the increase becomes more easy and rapid, but a person who has capital is already rich and doesn't need to consider how to become so. No matter how poor you may be, if you begin to do things in a certain way, you will begin to get rich, and you will begin to have capital. The getting of capital is a part of the process of getting rich, and it is a part of the result which invariably follows the doing of things in a certain way. You may be the poorest person on the continent and deeply in debt. You may not have friends, influence, or resources. But if you begin to do things in this way, you must infallibly begin to get rich, for like causes must produce like effects. If you have no capital, you can get capital. If you're in the wrong business, you can get into the right business. If you're in the wrong location, you can go to the right location, and you can do so by beginning in your present business and in your present location to do things in a certain way which causes success. Chapter 3. Is opportunity monopolized? No one is kept poor because opportunity has been taken away from her, because other people have monopolized the wealth and have put a fence around it. You may be prevented from engaging in certain businesses, but there are other channels open to you. Granted, it would be difficult for you to get control of any of the major airlines. That field is pretty well monopolized. But the World Wide Web is still in its infancy and offers enormous opportunity for enterprise. It will be but a few short years before products and services sold over the Internet will produce more millionaires than real estate or Wall Street, and in all its branches will give employment to hundreds of thousands and probably millions of people. It is quite true that if you are a ticket handler or a flight attendant employed by an airline, you have very little chance of becoming the owner of that airline. But it's also true that if you will begin to act in a certain way, you can soon leave your job at the airline, buy a computer more powerful than that airline's most powerful computer was 10 years ago, and begin a worldwide business for only a few thousand dollars. There is great opportunity at this time for the person who will use their imagination, focus their attention, and take action to make their dreams come true. Those who do will certainly get rich. You may say that it's impossible for you to get the computer, but I'm going to prove to you that it's not impossible and that you can certainly have your own successful business if you will simply go to work in a certain way. At different periods, the tide of opportunity sets in different directions, according to the needs of the whole, and a particular stage of social evolution which has been reached. At present, in America, it is setting towards information technology and healthcare and the related industries and professions. Today, the opportunity is open before healthcare professionals and computer technicians. It is open to the businessman or salesperson who supplies the computer professional more than before the one who supplies the farmer. There is abundant opportunity for the person who will go with the tide instead of trying to swim against it. So the factory workers or flight attendants, either as individuals or as a class, are not deprived of opportunity. No one is being kept down by their masters or being ground by the trusts and corporate raiders. As a class, they are where they are because they do not do things in a certain way. The individual, however, is not held down by the ignorance or lack of ambition of her class. You can follow the tide of opportunity to riches, and this book will tell you how. No one is kept in poverty by a shortage in the supply of riches. There is more than enough for all. A home as large as the White House might be built for every family on earth from the building material in the United States alone. And under intensive cultivation, this country could produce wool, cotton, linen, and silk enough to clothe each person in the world finer than Solomon was arrayed in all his glory, together with food enough to feed them all generously. The visible supply is practically inexhaustible, and the invisible supply really is inexhaustible. Everything you see on earth is made from one original substance out of which all things proceed. New forms are constantly being made and older ones are dissolving, but all are shapes assumed by the one thing. There is no limit to the supply of formless stuff or original substance. The universe is made out of it, but it was not all used in making the universe. The spaces in, through, and between the forms of the visible universe are permeated and filled with this original substance, with the formless stuff, with the raw material of all things. 10,000 times as much as has been made might still be made, and even then we should not have exhausted the supply of universal raw material. No one, therefore, is poor because nature is poor or because there is not enough to go around. Nature is an inexhaustible storehouse of riches. The supply will never run out. Original substance is alive with creative energy and is constantly producing more forms. When the supply of building material is exhausted, more will be produced. When the soil is exhausted so that food and materials for clothing will no longer grow upon it, It will be renewed, or more soil will be made. When all the gold and silver has been dug from the earth, if people are still at such a level of social development that we still need gold and silver, then more will be produced from the formless. The formless stuff responds to the needs of people. It will not let us be without any good thing. This is true of people collectively. The human race as a whole has always been abundantly rich, and if individuals are poor, it is because they do not follow the certain way of doing things which makes the individual man rich. The formless stuff is intelligent. It is stuff which thinks. It is alive and is always impelled towards more life. It is the natural and inherent impulse of life to seek to live more. It is the nature of intelligence to enlarge itself, and of consciousness to seek to extend its boundaries and find fuller expression. The universe of forms has been made by formless living substance, throwing itself into form in order to express itself more fully. The universe is a great living presence, always moving inherently towards more life and fuller functioning. Nature is formed for the advancement of life. Its impelling motive is the increase of life. For this cause, everything which can possibly minister to life is bountifully provided for. There can be no lack unless God is to contradict himself and nullify his own works. You are not kept poor by a lack in the supply of riches. It is a fact which I shall demonstrate a little further on, that even the resources of the formless supply are at the command of the man or woman who will act and think in a certain way. Chapter 4. The First Principle in the Science of Getting Rich. Thought is the only power which can produce or create tangible riches from the formless substance. The stuff from which all things are made is a substance which thinks, and the thought of any form in this substance produces the form. Original substance moves according to its thoughts. Every form and process you see in nature and in the cosmos is the visible expression of a thought in original substance. As the formless stuff thinks of a form, it takes that form. As it thinks of a motion, it makes that motion. That is the way all things were created. We live in a thought world, which is part of a thought universe. The thought of a moving universe extended throughout formless substance, and the thinking stuff moving according to that thought took the form of a system of planets and maintains that form. Holding the idea of a circling system of suns and worlds, it takes the form of those bodies and moves them as it thinks. Thinking the form of a slow-growing oak tree, it moves accordingly and produces the tree, though centuries may be required to do the work. In creating, the formless seems to move according to the lines of motion it has established. The thought of an oak tree does not cause the instant formation of a full-grown tree, but it does start in motion the forces which will produce the tree along established lines of growth. The laws of physics, biology, and chemistry all illustrate this principle. Every thought of form, held in thinking substance, causes the creation of the form, but always, or at least generally, along the lines of growth and action already established. The thought of a house of a certain construction, if it were impressed upon formless substance, might not cause the instant formation of the house, but it would cause the turning of creative energies already working in trade and commerce into such channels as to result in the speedy building of the house. And if there were no existing channels through which the creative energy could work, then the house might be formed directly from primal substance without waiting for the slow processes of the organic and inorganic world. No thought of form can be impressed upon original substance without causing the creation of the form. You are a thinking center and can originate thought. Any form that you fashion with your hands must first exist in your thought. You cannot shape a thing until you have thought that thing. And so far, humankind has confined our efforts wholly to the work of our hands. We have applied manual labor to the world of forms, seeking to change or modify those already existing. We have virtually never considered trying to cause the creation of new forms solely by impressing our thoughts upon formless substance. When a person has a thought form, he or she takes material from the forms of nature and makes an image of the form which is in his or her mind. We have so far made little or no effort to cooperate with formless intelligence, in essence to work with the Father, We have not dreamed that we can actually do what we see the Father doing. People reshape and modify existing forms by manual labor. We have given little or no attention to the question whether we may not produce things from formless substance by communicating our thoughts to it, although stories of mystics in every culture attest to the truth of this potentiality. We propose to prove that you may do so, to prove that any man or woman may do so, and to show how. As our first step, we must lay down three fundamental propositions. First, we assert that there is one original formless stuff or substance from which all things are made. All the seemingly many elements are but different presentations of one element. All the many forms found in organic and inorganic nature are but different shapes made from the same stuff. And this stuff is thinking stuff. A thought held in it produces the form of the thought. Thought in thinking substance produces shapes. You and everyone is a thinking center capable of original thought. If you can communicate your thought to original substance, and frankly it's impossible not to, you can cause the creation or formation of the thing you think about. To summarize this, there's a thinking stuff from which all things are made, and which in its original state permeates, penetrates, and fills the interspaces of the universe. A thought in this substance produces the thing that is imaged by the thought. You can form things in your thought, and by impressing your thought upon formless substance can cause the thing you think about to be created. You may ask if I can prove these statements, and without going into details, I answer that I can do so both by logic and experience. Reasoning back from the phenomenon of form and thought, I came to one original thinking substance, and reasoning forward from this thinking substance, I come to man's power to cause the formation of the things he thinks about. And by experiment, I find the reasoning true, and this is my strongest proof. If one person who reads this book gets rich by doing what it tells them to do, that is evidence in support of my claim. But if everyone who does what it tells them to do gets rich, that is positive proof until someone goes through the process and fails. The theory is true until the process fails, and this process will not fail, for everyone who does exactly what this book tells them to do will get rich. I have said that people get rich by doing things in a certain way, and in order to do so, men must become able to think in a certain way. A person's way of doing things is the direct result of the way that person thinks about things. To do things in a way you want to do them, you will have to acquire the ability to think the way you want to think. This is the first step towards getting rich. To think what you want to think is to think truth, regardless of appearances. This statement is no doubt controversial, but I suggest you consider it well. Every man has the natural and inherent power to think what he wants to think, but it requires far more effort to do so than it does to think the thoughts which are suggested by appearances. To think according to appearance is easy. To think truth, regardless of appearance, is laborious and requires the expenditure of more power than any other work man is called upon to perform. There is no labor from which most people shrink as they do from that of sustained and consecutive thought. It is the hardest work in the world. This is especially true when truth is contrary to appearances. Every appearance in the visible world tends to produce a corresponding form in the mind which observes it, and this can only be prevented by holding the thought of truth. To look upon the appearance of disease will produce the form of disease in your own mind and ultimately in your body, unless you hold the thought of the truth, which is that there is no disease, it is only an appearance, and the reality is health. To look upon the appearance of poverty will produce corresponding form in your own mind, unless you hold to the truth that there is no poverty, there is only abundance. To think health when surrounded by appearances of disease, or to think riches when in the midst of appearances of poverty, requires power. But the one who acquires this power becomes a mastermind. He can conquer fate. She can have all she wants. This power can only be acquired by getting hold of the basic fact which is behind all appearances. And that fact is that there is one thinking substance from which and by which all things are made. Then we must grasp the truth that every thought held in this substance becomes a form, and that you can so impress your thoughts upon it as to cause them to take form and become visible things. When we realize this, we lose all doubt and fear, for we know that we can create what we want to create. We can get what we want to have, and can become what we want to be. As a first step towards getting rich, you must believe the three fundamental statements given previously in this chapter, and in order to emphasize them, I repeat them here. There is a thinking stuff from which all things are made, and which in its original state permeates, penetrates, and fills the interspaces of the universe. A thought in this substance produces the thing that is imaged by the thought. You can form things in your thought, and by impressing your thought upon formless substance can cause the thing you think about to be created. Once you accept this concept of the universe, you must lay aside all others but this monistic one. You must dwell upon it until it is fixed in your mind and has become your habitual thought. Read these creed statements over and over again. Fix every word upon your memory, and meditate upon them until you firmly believe what they say. If a doubt comes to you, cast it aside. Do not listen to arguments against this idea. Do not go to churches or lectures where a contrary concept of things is taught or preached. Do not read magazines or books which teach a different idea. If you get mixed up in your faith, all your efforts will be in vain. Do not ask why these things are true, nor speculate as to how they can be true. Simply take them on trust. The science of getting rich begins with the absolute acceptance of this faith. This ends side one. Please fast forward the tape to listen.